I can't help but feeling excited every time I walk through these doors and every time I get a chance to do a presentation with my co-presenter. You know, as we approach this holiday season, this festive season, I know some of us are in a very optimistic mood. However, others of us find ourselves in sort of a maze, and it's hard to get out. You know, we thought COVID was going to go away, all right? And now we're dealing with a new variant, the Omicron variant. They're saying now has 50 different mutations. And scientists are racing to find strategies and cures. And as the winter steps in, the days are shorter, the nights are longer, and it's easy to become depressed. Some of us have lost loved ones along the way. And so even though some may be rejoicing, some may be sorrowful. And so we decided to put together this program with the intent of providing hope and healing and restoration. And so here are some thought-provoking questions. If you are a good Christian, you come to church every week, you are nice to people, should you still be depressed? If you're a good Christian, you pray every day, and you're still feeling down in the dumps, is that a bad thing? Can you be a Christian, a good Christian, and still have severe mental health issues? Why can't you pray this stuff away? And these are some of the tough questions that Stephanie and I are going to be answering. Funny story, last night we were here and Debbie called and we had her on speakerphone and Trevor brought the program. And I was looking at the program and Stephanie kind of snuck up behind me and next to her name it said sermon. And she's like, oh my gosh! I'm not a priest. I can't preach. I'm like, it's okay. She had a full-blown panic attack.
Just a little. Just a little.
So I need to introduce Stephanie to you. But before I do, Stephanie, I want to introduce you to the saints at the Ypsilanti Seventh-day Adventist yes. Church. I think this is your first visit to Seventh-day Adventist Church?
It is, yes.
It is, it is. And
amazing so far.
Pastor Liverpool is the pastor of this church, and I can't go into introducing everyone, but Keisha, what it is that you would like to know about Stephanie?
Oh.
What all of those letters stand for, and she will tell you. And Natus, what would you like to know about Stephanie? You just want to know.
Oh, wonderful.
Okay, Stephanie, yeah. Here's your chance to introduce yourself.
I think I can answer both of those questions and how I was going to introduce myself anyway. So that works out. Because I think, you know, professionally, that's what I like to speak to. People usually want to know what those letters are. And I like to tell you who I am and why I like to stand here and do things just like this. So by background, I am a master's level psychologist. And I'm also a certified brain injury specialist. I'm a certified case manager. I'm an advanced certified complex trauma specialist. Let's see what I'm missing. And a certified alcohol and drug counselor. So those are the letters. and I've been in practice about 13 years, and I've worked in a lot of different places, a lot of different paths, worked with a lot of different people, and you know, with a lot of different issues they were dealing with. I've worked side by side with Dr. King for the last, I don't know, 5 years at least.
Easily, yeah.
Yeah. And we do a lot of this together. But really what I'm passionate about is this. And I love to talk. Dr. King will tell you, just in general, I like to talk, but I especially like...
Yeah, I told Stephanie we only have about 4 to 5 minutes.
Yeah.
Because she can go at this all day.
I can. It's true. So I love speaking about this stuff because to me it's so meaningful and it's everything. It's life stuff. And if I can share some sort of knowledge that I have or experiences or my own personal stories that help someone else bring them growth or change or positivity or plant a seed, that means everything to me. And so that's why I'm, you know, happy to do this. And I'm delighted to be here, and thank you for having me in this arena to do the thing I love most. And so I hope, you know, what we can share today brings that for you.
Absolutely. So yeah. Christianity and mental illness.
Yes.
Can they coexist?
It's a big question. Yeah. Well, I think going back to some of the questions you posed earlier, I want to jump into that first.
Sure.
And give some background information. So what is mental illness? What is mental health? What is depression? What does that look like? And not just on the outside, you know, the signs and symptoms, of course, and what it feels like, but also what's going on inside of us when there's mental health stuff or issues or mental illness, and what's happening in our brains and within our bodies. So depression, for example, if we start there, can be thought of in a few different ways. It can be a mood. It can be a feeling we experience, something that comes and goes. Or it can be something that's persistent and chronic. It can be a diagnosis. And so as mental health professionals, we have this handbook that we use called the DSM here, and they tell us if it's a diagnosis, this is what some of that looks like. Here are the main criteria. And so the two big ones are depressed mood, of course, and that's generally just feeling low, but it can also be feeling sad. It can feel numb or empty inside. It can come with sense like overwhelming feelings of guilt. It can come with anxiety. And then the other big characteristic here is loss, meaning loss of interest or loss of pleasure in the things that you used to find interest in doing and used to find pleasure in engaging in, used to make you happy. And you can maybe still go do those things, but it's not bringing that same inner sense that it used to. So those are the two main characteristics. And there's a slew of other, you know, kind of qualities that can come with depression as well. And not everybody has all of them, but some of the very common ones are problems with sleep, you know, changes in sleep, not being able to sleep, insomnia, sleeping too much. I mean, you can have both of them, really. You can not be able to sleep at night, but find yourself not being able to stay awake during the day. Changes in appetite, changes in weight, trouble concentrating, negative mood is a big one too, having this negative outlook that goes hand in hand with those feelings of like things aren't going to change, or maybe negative outlook on your abilities to get better or your own self-worth. Those are all very common. And you were speaking to before a type of depression, a specific type of
Sure.
depression that I want to touch on, which is seasonal affective disorder. And it's easy to remember because it's abbreviated SAD, S-A-D.
So I have actually diagnosed myself with this one.
You have told me that.
Yes.
Yes. Yes. And that's when I asked why you moved to Michigan from somewhere sunny. Because we do tend to get these periods that are long and can dark. And I noticed the ceiling is low for a long time, and it can feel kind of like it's closing in. And this has been shown to affect a lot of people. Seasonal affective disorder is a type of depression that comes and goes predictably with the change in seasons. And so it usually has an onset in early fall or winter, and it usually goes away in the spring for people. And up to 10% of the U.S. population is affected by seasonal affective disorder. And they show the further north you go away from the equator, the higher the rates are. So, you know, we're a ways away, so it would make sense that in Michigan this is something that affects some of us, some of our community. I want to, you know, mention one other mood disorder before I kind of move on, which is probably something most of you have heard of before, bipolar disorder. And this can have some myths around it. I hear people saying like, oh, I was in one mood one second and another mood the next second, and I'm bipolar. But bipolar is more of like cyclical. So I'll explain that. So it's a mood disorder that, again, is very common, so it affects Over 3 million people are newly diagnosed every year. So that's a huge amount.
So you said 3 million, right?
Yes.
That's a lot.
It's a lot. I looked that up last night and was surprised.
And this is just in the U.S.?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, so with bipolar disorder, this is how it's different than depression. So it is a mood disorder where there's these shifts in mood and activity. So there's a couple different types. So I'm just going to tell you the main two. So if this is like your baseline of how you feel when you feel well, this is right here, kind of like, okay, I feel good, normal, not depressed, just the normal kind of feeling. One type is where you are on baseline and then you drop and have these low periods of depression and then back up to baseline for a while and then drop down, low periods of depression, back up to baseline for a little while. And there's these cycles that happen. And another type of depression is where if the baseline is here, you have these low lows, but then also these high highs, which we call mania or a manic episode. And you can think of that like the extreme opposite of depression. So it's not just feeling happy, it's feeling like euphoria that's grandiose, that's unreasonable, not sleeping at night, maybe overspending, having extreme ideas. So in the other type of bipolar, it goes from depression to manic episodes, and it cycles like that. So it's very difficult for individuals to feel, okay, to feel normal when they're dealing with that. And again, it's a really common thing. And I want to take a minute to mention here something I touched on a moment ago, which is that most of these things that we're talking about, so depression especially, but anxiety, they lie on a spectrum. I think of it like this. So I put that little line up there on the slides. On one end, these things are normal human emotions that most of us feel from one time to another. We felt anxious before. We felt depressed.
Kind of like how you felt anxious when you heard that you were supposed to be the priest for today,
that is right.
So that is normal.
Well, in disclosure, I grew up in a Catholic church where only the priests could come give sermons. So when you put my name next to it, I was like, I'm not a priest. But yes, that's a good case in point.
Okay.
So on one end, this is a symptom, right? We can have a feeling and then it can go. But on the other end of the spectrum is maybe it's a diagnosis, right? So it's a disorder, something we need professional help with, and there's different severities. And then there's everything in between. There's all the different things in between. So with that said, there's a difference between like a mental health issue and mental illness or a mental health diagnosis. And I think it's also notable, I try to think of like, if I know it's on a spectrum and I recognize that maybe I'm moving more towards the middle, that it's important to recognize it before it progresses further down the spectrum. And I was thinking today, like, is physical health is kind of the same way. So if I was to have a cut on my arm and it wasn't a big deal, I wouldn't need to go to the hospital probably. But if I didn't acknowledge it or do anything about it, it could move its way into a diagnosis, right? It could move its way into, it could get infected and all these things. So mental health issues are very similar in that way. They fall on this spectrum. So we talked a little bit, or I talked about like the outside, what the signs and symptoms are. So I want to just spend a moment talking about the inside. The things that we don't regularly see that have to do with mental health, meaning what's going on inside our bodies and inside our brains when and if we're dealing with any of these issues, like depression or anxiety. But today, especially, I think we're focusing on depression, so I'll talk about that. So let's start here. As humans, we all have kind of the same systems, right? We reside in these vessels here, and we all, if you look inside, we have organs and bones and muscles and all of this, all of these things inside. And when we look at them through scans, brain scans, or all the different types of scans that exist, we can see predictable patterns of how these things work inside of us to help us function and get through our day. So our brain, of course, a very important one, as we know. it's like a neural network that is sending messages all day long and helping us get stuff done. It's helping us communicate and helping us walk and
so
talk.
So here's a good schematic, right? So
this is perfect.
So as humans, our brain is consists of 100 billion neurons.
Wow.
And a trillion connections, right? More connections than the stars in the universe. So
wow.
Everyone has a brain, every living person.
I would hope, yes. Yes. It, on the way here, when I was thinking about this, I had this image of those old telephone operators, like connecting the pieces in,
yes.
And thinking of all of, like, that is what our brain is doing times a trillion, apparently, and just doing this for us in the background. And, you know, like, each lobe of the brain here, and they're color-coded on the screen, holds a different function. So we have the occipital lobe in the back that's in charge of vision. It takes in information from here, processes it so that we understand it. And now the next picture I have here of the body, what is highlighted there is actually our nervous system. And I thought this is such a fascinating picture because it's something we don't think about a lot, our nervous system. But look how integral it is. This system runs from the tip of our head to the tip of our toes to the tip of our fingers, and it impacts so greatly, plays such a huge role in how we feel from day to day. Feel physically, right? Because it processes pain and those senses, and then how we feel emotionally and physically. Because when we feel an emotion like anxiety or depression, we don't just feel it here, we feel it here too, right? We feel it all over. And our nervous system is really important in that. It, you know, if we feel pain, we feel relaxed, we feel nervous, we feel on edge, and so on. So these two systems work together a lot. And this little guy in the center of our brain, which I don't know, is that in there in your model?
Yeah, so what it is, you're talking about
the limbic system.
Limbic system, right? So what it is, and please do not try this at home, right? If you were to drill a hole at the top of this brain and drill a hole through this person's ear so that they intersect, mm-hmm. the point where they intersect, that houses the limbic system.
Right in the middle.
Right in the middle.
Yeah.
So that's what you're about to talk about.
Yeah, right? Absolutely. Mm-hmm. I didn't know if that came apart and it was like a little...
Well, it does come
apart. It does,
apart,
but we won't do that
now.
Yeah, it's kind of
hard
we don't
to put that
to...
yeah, together.
Okay. So the limbic system, you can see highlighted in red on this slide there. And it has a couple different parts to it. The amygdala is one of the main pieces that's in charge of our emotions. And when we feel things like, you know, joy, sadness, fear, we see that activity happening in the amygdala. And when I say we see it, I mean if you were to look at a scan of someone's brain and to show, you know, promote these emotions in them, you could see that area change based on the emotion that they're feeling. So going back to depression again, what does that look like in the brain? What does that look like in the limbic system? And what we see is that when there's someone who has depression, who is suffering from depression, who meets those, you know, criteria or can tell us, we see that the amygdala is overactive and hypersensitive to even small negative events. And it's something that isn't something the person consciously raises their hand to do, like, I'd like a hypersensitive amygdala, you know. It's just happening in there with depression. That's part of what is occurring.
And so someone who's already predisposed is likely to latch on to negative content.
They're more vulnerable to it. Absolutely. Yeah, and even though, you know, like I said before, we live in these bodies and we have a lot of the same stuff inside, we all have a little differences too, genetically, and so there can be genetic predispositions and there can be life circumstances that contribute to differences in our brains, which is what makes us all unique, right? If we were all the same, we wouldn't learn from each other.
Sure.
So, you know, basically... that is what it looks like on the outside, the things I describe, what it feels like. And then it's really interesting to be able to think about what's happening inside, because that's the stuff we don't get to see a lot, right? And I think that's why mental illness can also get a stigma around it, is because we can't see it. It's hard to understand it. But once you can see, and we've had the opportunity working in neuropsychology to see people's brain scans and to understand it on a deeper level.
Yep, and it is, to me, one of the most fascinating things just to actually look at a human brain and to look at the different parts that are responsible for different functions. So you did a great job talking about the physiology of humans, right? So from what you said, I gather it doesn't matter if you're black or white, if you're male or female, we are subject to what you just described, just the physiology of humans.
This is what we know, right?
This from is this, what we know.
The science of it, absolutely. I think of it as it's the human condition, right? This is what we're kind of given and dealt with. We have these bodies, we have these brains, we have these systems. They work. We can see some predictable ways they interact with each other and understand them a little better, yeah.
So our topic is Christianity and depression. Can they coexist? I notice you stayed completely away from that, and you did not touch that at all. And you told me that you were not going to, but I'm gonna drag you in willingly unwillingly. So
that's cool.
So let us get to it. Mental illness or depression and Christianity, can they coexist? And what I want to do is to share two biblical examples that we all know about, but I took a fresh look at them, and I was amazed by what I saw. And Stephanie, when I spoke to you about this, you said that you weren't very familiar with the story of Jonah. Mm-mm. So I'm going to tell it as though it's being told for the very first time. Right? So he was a prophet. He was a Hebrew, Jewish, and he was living in a certain region. And then God said to Jonah, he spoke to Jonah and said, I want you to go to a place called Nineveh. And I want you to preach to those people in the hope that they can be converted. Because apparently they were super evil. Like, they were very, very, very bad people. And so God selected this guy. Matter of fact, the name Jonah or Jonah means dove, gentle, right? And Jonah was only one of four early prophets singled out by Jesus. One of four. So this guy was very prominent, and he was very, very important. So when God called him, God knew exactly what he was doing, right? Mm-hmm. And he said, I want you to go to these people. How are we doing so far? Are we okay with
I'm
that?
I'm following, yes.
You're
good.
You're following,
yes.
Okay? And then Jonah decided, thanks, but no thanks. I'm not going to do this. So he decided to go in the opposite direction.
Oh, he said no.
Yes, he decided to run away, right? So here is where we pick up the conversation. So if we can flip to the next PowerPoint, and if I can...
Oh, yeah, yep.
And so we're talking about mental illness and Christianity, mm-hmm. right? Can they coexist? And I said, I want to use two prominent biblical figures. I am known to be controversial, right? And so I don't want to interpret anything. I don't want to give anything any meaning. I just want to take my time and just read what the Bible says. Yeah. Right. Let the Bible tell Stephanie Hume the story.
Yes.
Okay? So Jonah 1:9-13. It says, he answered, this is Jonah speaking now, right? Mm-hmm. I'm a Hebrew, and I worship the Lord, the God of heaven, who made the sea and the dry land. So this was a good Christian guy. This terrified them, and they asked, what have you done? They knew he was running away from the Lord because he had already told them so. The sea was getting rougher and rougher, so they asked him, what should we do to you to make the sea calm down for us? So these are the sailors now talking to Jonah, right?
Mm-hmm.
The good guy.
Okay.
This is what he said. Pick me up. Throw me into the sea, it will become calm. This is my fault. Instead, the men did their best to row back to land. Jonah's word indicates, his words indicate that he met the criteria for someone who was suicidal. Mm-hmm. Would you agree? He said, pick me up.
Throw me in the sea.
Throw me in the sea. If you have
helpless.
A client that tells you, pick me up, throw me in front of a car, what options would you have? What would you do?
I would see hopelessness and helplessness and hospitalization maybe an option.
As a clinician.
If they were serious.
Yes. And no, he was serious.
Yeah.
He was not playing. He was dead serious. Mm-hmm. So that's what you will do. So far, he seems to meet the criteria for depression. I'm just reading what the Bible says. So, and also, there's some features of bipolar here. I bet you didn't see that, because before he was sleeping, he was sound asleep. Then he wakes up when they woke him up, and he jumps to the other extreme and he says, throw me overboard. But there is more. Now I'm reading from Jonah 2, 9 to 10. This is Jonah speaking now, right? So from throw me overboard, here's my man speaking. He said, but I with shouts of grateful praise will sacrifice to you. With shouts of grateful praise, I will sacrifice to you. This is the same person. What I have vowed, I will make good. I will say, salvation comes from the Lord. This is Jonah speaking, the same guy who said, throw me overboard. He's shouting now in grateful prayers. What are you seeing here so far?
Seems like the opposite end here.
The opposite end, right? So he goes from kill me to now shouting in grateful prayers, right? So these are some of the signs, of the typical signs that you will see, right? Okay, so you can still argue that I am crazy and this is not correct. Verse 10, and the Lord commanded the fish, and it vomited Jonah onto dry land. I'm reading now Jonah 3, 6 to 10. When Jonah's warning reached the king of Nineveh, so now he comes to himself, he does his job, he proclaims exactly what he should have done in the first place. It just took him a little detour to get there.
He had to go through a little bit.
He had to go through a little bit. He had to be shaken, right?
Yes.
Like some of us, right? Sometimes you have to shake us, right?
Happens.
So he goes now and he preaches a powerful sermon, right? And so this is now, he rose from, this is now the king of that country speaking.
Okay.
Right? He rose from his throne, took off his royal robes, covered himself with sackcloth, and sat down in the dust. Verse 7. This is a proclamation now that the king is making to his people. So Jonah comes to them now. He tells the king, you guys, you're going to die. You guys are mean people. So now the king says to his people, by the decree of the king and his nobles, do not let people or animals, herds or flock, taste anything. Do not let them eat or drink. But let the people and animals be covered with sackcloth. Let everyone call urgently on God. Let them give up their evil ways and their violence. Who knows? God may yet relent and have compassion on them. When the king, when God saw what they did and how they turned from their evil ways, guess what? God relented. And he said, I'm not going to destroy these people anymore. Mm-hmm. Right? So let me ask you a question. If you were Jonah, when your mission is accomplished, what would be the appropriate reaction?
Maybe just bow out and go.
Bow out and go. Exactly. But
listen
what Jonah did.
Okay.
But to Jonah, this seemed very wrong. Mm-hmm. And he became angry. He prayed to the Lord, isn't this what I said while I was at home? That is what I tried to forestall by fleeing to Tarshish. I knew, this is Jonah now, mad, angry. He said, I knew you are a gracious God. You are full of compassion. You are abounding in love. And this is why I didn't want to go. Now, he says in verse 3, he said, take away my life, for it is better for me to die. What are you seeing here now?
We're back in the same place.
We're back in the same place again. So now he is really mad. I believe this is what mental illness looks like, wouldn't you say?
There's certainly a lot of the symptoms, yeah.
A lot of the symptoms.
Yeah, and it's making me think of a question that I've heard before about Jonah and other highly prominent spiritual figures. And that's just that I've heard posed, right?
Okay.
That if there's an individual like Jonah in this leadership position, why was he chosen? Why was he chosen to carry out, to be a leader, to carry out these very important roles?
Interesting. That's an interesting question. That's a very interesting question. But before I answer that question, can I read a few more verses?
Yeah.
I just want to convince everyone of what I'm seeing. I'm reading from verse 5, and I'm going to answer that question in one sec. It says, now Jonah had gone out and sat down at a place east of the city. He made himself a shelter. He sat in the shade, and he now was waiting to see what's going to happen to these evil people. Hmm. You ask the question, why would God choose someone like this? Someone who was mean, vengeful, bipolar, to preach his gospel. Why would he do this? And so here's my answer, right? First of all, we are not perfect human beings. Mm-hmm. This tells me that if God could choose Jonah, he can use people like you and myself. Yes, there is a space for us. His choice was not accidental. Mm-hmm. So why would he choose someone like him? Because there is a role for each of us, imperfect though we may be. But there's another reason. And this one may blow your mind. God has a way of using imperfect people to preach a perfect gospel.
Hmm.
Does that make sense?
I love that. Yes, it absolutely resonates.
Imperfect people to preach a perfect gospel. Now, I'm not sure if you know this, but if you read the Bible, and when you do, look at it again. A number of the people in the Bible, writers, leaders, to answer your question, are thieves, losers, rascals, and murderers. I'm answering your question.
Yeah.
You asked the question.
It's a question I hear, right?
Yes. Moses, who is credited with writing the first 5 books of the Bible, did you know that he had a serious anger management problem?
Mm-mm.
Yes. He had an awful temper. In fact, that's how Moses actually killed an Egyptian. Moses was actually a murderer.
Wow.
I'm answering your question.
Yeah.
David. You know the story of David. He was a hot mess. He really was. So why would God choose these type of people, right? David was a hot mess. He's written some of the most beautiful psalms in the Bible, right? Why would God choose someone like Jonah, like Moses, like David? And in the New Testament now, the Apostle Paul. The Apostle Paul was not a nice guy. If you read, he actually wrote 13 books in the New Testament. This guy would go into churches like now, and he would drag women and children out of the church and take them to be crucified and killed.
Oh my gosh.
This is what the Apostle Paul did.
Wow.
But he wrote 13 books in the Bible. What is this saying? God has a way of using imperfect and broken people. And if you still want me to convince you a little bit more, Miss Hume.
Convince me.
Yes, I have to go to the cross. You know, before the cross became so prominent in Christianity, the cross was actually a symbol of shame and disgrace. So, yes, if you were crucified on a cross, that stigma will run throughout your generation and genealogy. Everyone will know Stephanie Hume was crucified on the cross. Therefore, her children, her grandchildren, and her grandchildren will be stigmatized and stereotyped. That was the symbol of the cross.
Wow.
In fact, when people were crucified on the cross, they were typically crucified naked. Bet you didn't know that, right?
Like, more shame, right?
More
to
shame.
Try to bring more shame.
More shame.
Right.
And that's how Jesus was actually crucified.
Yes, that I knew.
More shame,
mm-hmm.
right? So, what Jesus did, he took that symbol of shame and he transformed it into a symbol of hope and glory.
Yes.
So that now you go into any Christian church and you see the cross and you know that the cross is going to make a difference. So God uses imperfect people and imperfect things to tell his story.
Yes, I love that so much. And as you were saying it, it was reminding me of part of my own story that I think I've shared with you before.
Well, tell it.
Which is, for the longest time, I felt like, just like that, like not good enough, right? There was this imaginary, and I don't know that it was something I knew consciously, maybe a little bit, place I thought I had to be, that this up here was good enough, and until I reached it, I really couldn't engage in my life or live my life. I'd be a good therapist and psychologist once I was here. I could be a good person once I was
actually,
here.
You were actually waiting to get there.
I was always waiting. Mm-hmm. I was always waiting. Mm-hmm. And that waiting kept me from putting myself out there and doing things like this. And I look back now, and it felt so real, but I kind of laugh at it at this point, because to me, it's not, I don't feel sad about it. It's kind of like this revelation that this, I don't have to be up here to engage in my life. Engage right now. Be me right now. And I don't have to be perfect. In fact, I won't be. And to me, that's the human condition, is that life is a little messy. But if I can stand up and be vulnerable and not be perfect and share my story and share my
knowledge
with
people. Still be
of
use, right? And still be a broken vessel used to proclaim a perfect message. That's not bad at all.
No, and when people tell me even one little thing of something that I said does that for them, it fills my heart, which is why I love to speak.
Absolutely.
So,
and we have been in several places in Jackson, Michigan. We've done several presentations up in the UP, and every time we've spoken, people have said, thank you very much. Thank you for addressing our mental health concerns. So I have one more question for you.
Yeah.
So Jonah was clearly imperfect, right? And, you know, we can understand and excuse that. Now here's the sensitive spot. We're talking about Christianity and mental illness or mental health. How about Jesus?
Mm-hmm. That was a question I just heard being asked too.
Yes.
What about Jesus? He was human as well.
Well, I'm glad you asked. Let us go there. I'm going directly now to the scriptures,
okay.
right?
Yeah.
Was he subjected to mental health challenges? Isaiah 53:3, it says, he was despised and rejected by mankind, a man of suffering and familiar with pain, like one from whom people hid their faces, he was despised and we held him in low self-esteem. In low esteem. Now Mark 14:34 is a great punchline from the New International Version. It says, my soul is overwhelmed with sorrow to the point of death. This is Jesus speaking. He said to them, stay here and watch with me. Let me give you another one. Mark 14:34. He told them, my soul is crushed with grief to the point of death. This is depression. This is sadness.
It feels so heavy.
This is a heavy load, right? Different version, right? He said to them, my soul is very sorrowful, even to death. And then he said to his disciples, remain here and watch with me. So the Bible clearly shows that Jesus was susceptible to our emotions.
Mm-hmm.
He was susceptible to our emotions and sadness. And so Christianity and mental health issues, they are not mutually exclusive. You can be a Christian and still be afflicted with all of these different mental health issues, depression, bipolar, anger, even suicidal thought. Because you are human, we are subject to a lot of these things that we are talking about today. Hebrews 4:15 is sort of like my hope, and this is what it says: "For we do not have a high priest who is unable to empathize with our weaknesses, but we have one who has been tempted in every way like we have been, yet without sin." But he knows exactly what we're talking about when we say, "I'm depressed, I'm sad, I'm hurting." Isn't that amazing?
Absolutely.
So, why do these things happen? Why does depression happen? What are some thoughts you have?
The phrase that keeps coming back to me is, it's the human condition. Mm-hmm. It's part of who we are. And I think about, again, you know, ourselves as a whole. We have these physical health, right, these bodies we live in, but we're multidimensional, right? We have spiritual health, we have mental health, we have emotional health, we have social health. And that's all part of us, and it's all part of being human.
And then, you know, there's some genetic components of it, right?
Absolutely.
Like, you know, certain diseases and illnesses run in some families.
Sure. So we talked about before some of the contributing factors that can lead to depression, right? Mm-hmm. Like the seasons and genetics as well, too.
Some cancers run in some family, right? Mm-hmm. Breast cancer.
Yeah.
Prostate cancer. Diabetes. Certain forms of mental illness.
Yes.
They just run in some family, and we don't know why. But these things happen.
And you're more vulnerable or predisposed to those types of disorders by no choice of one's own, right? It's
Absolutely.
Just, again, part of the human condition. Another thing, you know, being a trauma specialist, which is kind of where my heart is, and I know that may sound weird to say about trauma, but I know trauma is everywhere, and so understanding it and helping other people understand it's really important to me. What we see is that there's an undeniable link between those who've experienced trauma and depression and other mental health issues. And it doesn't have to be a huge, big trauma. It can be an accumulation of smaller traumas. It can be medium traumas. It can be one small trauma. We talk to people a lot right now, healthcare workers, during this pandemic, and we see trauma all over the place. This has just been such a long period of stress, where people are burnt out and have been pushed to their very edges of what they're capable of. And, you know, that's trauma too, right?
So let us wrap up and talk about what can we do.
Yeah.
Let us talk about the what. So, you know, we've spoken about depression.
Mm-hmm.
I believe I've shown the link between Christianity and mental illness, that the two can coexist.
Mm-hmm.
Use the example of Jonah. Use the example of Jesus to show that he was subject to a lot of mental health issues, right? He had to face his own challenges. Now, as members of Ypsilanti Church, if some of us are depressed or angry or anxious, overly anxious, what can we do? What are some strategies? What can we do?
Well, one of the first thing that comes to mind for me is counseling, right? And being a psychologist, as you are, is one of the things that I'm always an advocate for. And not just being an advocate for, but it's evidence-based to show, to improve the symptoms of depression, one of the most effective ways to do it. And there's sometimes myths around what counseling or therapy looks like.
So can you push pause for one sec?
Yeah,
I'm going to ask the guys in the booth to flip to your PowerPoint.
Back to that?
Yeah. So as you speak, I'm going to ask them to flip back to that PowerPoint.
Oh, yeah, sure. So. Perfect. Yep.
Yep.
So counseling is, this is how I like to explain it, and my belief of what it should be. It is a safe and confidential and non-judgmental space that you have a professional relationship with your counselor, and it's someone that you can kind of vent to and bounce ideas off of and learn new strategies, new ways of thinking about things, new skills from. And I know You know, I think of it like, again, we're multidimensional, right? If we go to the doctor to take care of our physical health, why not do the same with our mental health?
So we have counseling, and if you advance that, if you keep going.
Let's see. Here we go. We're getting there.
Yeah, so medication management, right? I know a number of people are skeptical about medication management. I am not taking that. I'm not touching that. I can just pray. I can just pray and God can heal me, right? There are some of us who actually believe that. If I pray, God can take care of everything. But I'm here to tell you that, yes, God can if he chooses to. What if he doesn't choose to? Because he's giving you the tools to take care of it yourself, right? Mm-hmm. So I want to show the next slide why medication management is so important. As you look at the screen, this is a SPECT scan of someone who has the disease of schizophrenia, for example. On the left, this is what this person's brain looks like without medication. And on the right, that's what this person's brain looks like with medication. So clearly you can see that there is a space for medication management when it comes to treating certain disorders.
Yeah, and self-care is another big part of it. And self-care can look like taking ourselves to the doctor when we need to go, no matter what kind of doctor it might be, taking medications that we may need. Sometimes when I'm talking about medication with my clients, I say, I'll say, what if someone had diabetes? Would you tell them not to take insulin? Would it be the same? And they're like, well, no, I get that. I'll take the insulin.
Yes, right? Because it's physical, right?
I can actually see it. And you suffer without it.
Correct.
Right?
Correct.
Yeah. So another part of self-care, again, being these kind of whole, we have all these different parts to us, is our physical self-care, taking care of our physical health and wellness. And that can look like exercise, which Dr. King will talk about in a moment. But what we fuel our body with is so important, too. I use analogies of cars a lot because it's easier for people to like understand. And I think it's just a great, simple analogy. But you want to put something good in your car, right? You want to put gasoline, somewhere that 87, 88, whatever it is at the station. You want to put oil in there when it's needed as well. And that's going to make it function well. And everyone's body, to some degree, needs a bit of a different fuel. But paying attention to what we're putting in it, and not for the sake of how it looks on the outside, but for the sake of how you feel on the inside. Is what I'm fueling my body with make me feel energetic and happy, light on my feet, or
so
do I feel
healthy,
heavy?
So a healthy lifestyle is important in managing. I didn't think we were going to include this slide. So what that is, it speaks to the benefits of exercise, right? Yep. And, you know, we're brain injury specialists, mm-hmm. and we know the importance of exercise and blood flow,
yes.
right? Because our brain consumes 30% of the calories that we consume. And so when we exercise, we actually oxygenate mm-hmm. our blood vessels and blood cells in the brain.
Absolutely. Yeah, and there's studies that show that exercise in some cases are equally as effective as antidepressants in helping with depression. We can see
absolutely.
Those changes in the brain.
Absolutely. Can we go to the next slide?
Yeah, absolutely. Quick. Yep. Oh, okay, quick.
So
last
so,
one.
Yeah, so we need to talk about the importance of meditation and trust in God. And they've done several studies that show that people who meditate a lot, right? The studies have shown a reduction in blood pressure level, mm-hmm. a normalization of pulse and heart rate, mm-hmm. and even an increase in dopamine levels in the brain. And dopamine is one of the feel-good chemicals that balances us out. Mm-hmm. And so meditation is also a crucial part of managing mental health issues.
And it regulates that nervous system that runs from head to toe.
Absolutely.
It keeps it nice and regulated and decreases anxiety.
Absolutely. And this brings us to our last slide and a quote that I know you love. Says, it's okay not to be okay, but it's not okay to stay that way.
It's okay to not be okay.
It's not okay to stay that way. Our time is far spent, and we were supposed to be out of here, but just in case anyone had one quick question that we could answer in terms of Christianity and mental health issues?
Yes, it is.
Okay, very, very good, good question. And so what happens is that some things, as we mentioned, they just tend to run in generations, right? And we don't know why. We don't always understand why. There are some races where some things are more prominent than in others. So, yes, so it can be seen as generational. We are at our max time. We want to thank you. However, we have to close right now. So thank you guys very much, and may God continue to bless you guys. Thank you. Thank you.